Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, June 30th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, once again, it's time for the gardening program. And joining us, horticulturalist Bob Graves, co-owner of Fattigan's Nursery, gardener Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. It's the gardening show. We welcome your calls, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. And there are some other ways you can contact us, but I will tell you those when we begin the show. Once again, that number, 800-348-2551. Now, if you've heard the gardening show, you know it gets very crowded. We try to get to as many calls as we can. Inevitably, somebody is left on the line. This is a perfect time to get in while there are open lines. The show begins after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the gardening show for the month of June, and we've got our dream team here today. Who are they? I'll tell you. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fattigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. And Fred Breglia, director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. We welcome your calls right now, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also post your comments on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or tweet them at WAMC Vox Pop, or email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the phone number is 800-348-2551. Bob, Greg, and Fred, welcome back to the show, gentlemen.
Hey, great to be back.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
It's going to be a busy show, I have a feeling. We already have a couple of emails, so let's just get right to them. This one came in, 40 minutes ago from Akira. My parents have beautiful Japanese maple trees in their yard, and every year they drop dozens of tiny seedlings. What is the process for harvesting them and replanting them on my lawn? What time of year should I do it? They have some that are about 3 feet tall, some tiny ones less than 6 inches tall. Which should I use? And that's from Akira.
Wow, that's a great question.
That's a good question.
Because a lot of things do that, will reseed, and you wonder what to do. The little ones can be moved today. They're so little, you should be able to get a root ball.
Won't even know they've been moved.
No. Yeah. That three-footer, though, you may want to wait until October. Certainly wait until we've gotten a little rain or water it really well. You may be able to move it during the summer. Typically, we're suggesting that it goes dormant before you move it. So that would be leaf drop.
Kind of general rule of thumb with things that have leaves that are deciduous is to not move them when they have leaves. So you move them before or after they fall.
Move them when they're sleeping. Yep. Just like a baby, you move them from one room to another, and they wake up, they don't cry.
Right.
Okay. Sure.
In theory.
What dreamland are you living in? All right. This one came in from Lee in Modena. As the proud caretaker of a beautiful golden rain tree, I find both short and long vertical splits in the bark. There has been no mechanical abuse to the tree. Are these a potential problem, and what can I do about them? That's from Lee.
Well, you know, those kind of splits happen on a lot of trees. They're often called frost cracking because they have to do with moisture, sap flow in the wintertime. On days when it gets warm, the sap flow kind of moves in those cells. Then it gets cold at night, and this winter is certainly a lot of fluctuating temperatures. And those cells freeze, and they often cause these very straight and vertical cracks in trees. Now, most of the time, minor cases, the tree will seal those back up, and away you go. A little supplemental fertilizer could help that. Water is going to be key on any injury.
This type of winter was especially bad for that because we had warm weather and cold weather and warm weather and cold And the tree can't adapt itself to those rapid temperature changes.
And there's cell destruction that occurs.
On a really cold winter's day, when it's really cold but the sun is very bright, the temperature of the tissue warms up, but then at sundown, within 60 seconds, the temperature of that bark drops dramatically.
Yep, and that's what causes it. So in most cases, it will, like I said, seal itself back up. So in most cases, they're good. Keep the watering up, especially with drought that we've been seeing.
I would say, just to change the subject a little bit, it's possible that these vertical lines she's seeing are not frost cracks, that they are just part of the tree expansion, that
could
tree
be too. Yep.
Does have some vertical aspect to older bark. But if they're deep and you can, kind of look inside and little creatures are crawling in and out of them, like like earwigs or something, then yes, those definitely were frost cracks. But it's possible they're just lines. Okay.
The accepted way to prevent that in the wintertime is to wrap it with something white so it reflects the sun. You're not trying to keep it warm. You're trying to keep it cold.
Yeah, you're trying to, and also the sun hitting that bark, it literally helps to warm those cells. So if you put something there to shade that a little bit, theoretically, that would help that situation. And then get that wrap off in the springtime.
All right, one last email, and then we'll get to the phones at 800-348-2551. This is from Chris in Cornwall on Hudson. My very old and very large mulberry tree usually produces a lot of fruit, but this year it's producing almost nothing. Could this be due to the early warm spring followed by a brief period of severe frost? Is there anything I could do to give it a shot in the arm this summer or fall? And that's from Chris in Cornwall on Hudson.
And that is the winter damage that we are seeing around a lot.
Same thing the orchards had. They started to flower and they got hurt.
Yeah, so, it will come back. That's the good news for him. And there's not much you got to do to get it to come back. So, mulberry's a tough plant.
Blueberries all were able to get through it, and they've fruited quite nicely. A lot of apples didn't. It's also possible that the mulberry had a light year. If it has some fruit on it now, it very well may be that it just did not have a lot of flowers.
Sometimes they're alternate heavy one year.
Yeah, they are. Most trees seem to be that way.
And the good thing, if there is a good thing about the dry weather, is it's probably helping to set up a lot of potential flowering buds for next year, that this kind of dry weather will bring on flower buds so that next year we'll have a lot of potential fruit set.
Let's go to the phones at 800-348-2551. We start out with Kerry in Plainfield, Mass. Kerry, you're up.
Hi, Ray. Got a perfect day for the garden show.
Oh, yeah.
I have two quick and I think easy to answer questions. Okay, I grow both soft and hardneck garlic. The hardneck garlic has the curly pigtail type scapes that grow on top that I believe are edible. If I were to cut those scapes off now, would the bulbs seem to grow larger?
You should remove the scapes now because that is part of the harvest process. Yes, so the sooner you remove the scapes, the better, and the bulbs will benefit from that.
Okay, great. And the second question, tomato plants, you get the suckers, and I always remove those. On my eggplant, it appears like I have the same kind of growth as a sucker as like on a tomato plant. Is it okay to remove those on an eggplant too?
I've never done it. I've never read that it is necessary. I think it's up to you. If they're flowering quite a bit and you want to get those flowers to fruit up right away, sure. But otherwise, I wouldn't think it's necessary.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
All right, Kerry, we appreciate it. Over to line two, and Louie in Walden. Louie, you're up.
Good afternoon, guys. I love this program.
Thanks.
I have grapevines that I originally planted like 10 years ago, so they're fully mature. But here's my issue. Every year, the grapes seem to just shrivel and wither on the vine. They never fully mature. I am a passive gardener. I don't water. I just let the good Lord take care of them. Is there something else I need to be doing?
There are a couple of diseases that affect the fruit quality, sometimes the foliage as well, of grapes. Without getting a photo of those or talking about it just a little bit more, I don't think I could recommend a specific treatment, but if you wanted to email that to info@wardsnursery.com, if you have a photo or two of the fruit or when it if it's starting to happen now, we can direct you. But more than likely you would be it would be recommended to apply a fungicide.
Yeah, if you're looking to not have to do anything, don't expect to get much grape.
grapes are one that definitely requires.
They need some attention.
Preventative sprays in a lot of cases. So also, if you put a fungicide down now, if you're starting to see symptoms of these grapes not looking good, it's important to know that fungicides are better preventers than they are cures. So once you see the grapes kind of looking bad, you may as well wait till next season at this point in the game.
It's also really important to trim those every year too, to clean them up, prune them.
And that may be part of it. Yeah. If you're not pruning heavily, the congestion of that may be attributing to that as well. But there are organic fungicides. It is something that I wouldn't mind helping you with if I could see some more info.
Okay. So info at Ward's.
Yeah, info@wardsnursery.com. Or if you just go to the website, there's one spot.
One more quick question. Groundhogs, is there any magic thing I can sprinkle around the edge of my fence to keep them out?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. We've been recommending putting, used kitty litter or ammonia in the hole that they come out of, and that will discourage them from living there. They will move out. of that
okay.
spot.
Okay.
Well, that's interesting.
What I've done in the past is a small electric fence. They make them especially for groundhogs because they're just really tough to repel.
Small electric fence? What about children in the neighborhood?
Well, you put another fence outside the electric
fence. Okay, fair
fence.
Enough.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Hey, Louie, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. The number is 800-348-2551. All right, we have a minute 45 before the break. Let's go to David in New Paltz. David, you're on.
Yes, I have a two-part question. I have a backyard that has some outcroppings of stone outcropping.
Yep.
And I read in an archaeological magazine that in ancient times in the desert communities, they would plant grapevines and other fruit-bearing vine plants around these outcroppings because the coolness of the rock would attract the moisture from the hot air. Do you have any thoughts on that? Would that work in this area?
My gut feeling would be probably the climate where that might work is probably different enough that I don't think that would be a real great way to proceed here, especially with the crops that you mentioned, like grapes. Things like that are going to want a little richer soil. So if you're anywhere near those outcroppings, that means we have really, really Sahara Desert type dry.
It might be a more Mediterranean type of climate.
So that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. A different climate that would probably work, but in our zone, it would work for other things, but it certainly would not be what I would recommend. You know, grapes and anything that likes good soil. How about rock garden plants? Things like sedum, the hen and chicks, any of those types of plants that like it really dry. I mean, people pay a lot of money to get these rock outcroppings in their yard made and make it look natural. You've got one. So anytime I see those in landscapes, I say, hey, that's a really great opportunity to make a nice garden.
David, you have a part two. I'll keep you on hold here. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll get back to part two of your question. It's 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. The Gardening Show. We'll be back.
Support comes from Northshire Bookstore, presenting the Scholastic Summer Reading Road Trip, Wednesday, July 13th from 2 to 5 p.m. in Saratoga Springs, New York, northshire.com. Mabee Farm Historic Site, presenting Mabee Farm Canal Fest, Saturday, July 16th, featuring music, games, ice cream, crafts, demonstrations, and more. SchenectadyHistorical.org. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, presenting its fourth annual Lake George Hikeathon, July 5th, featuring 14 sites around Lake George, lakegeorgehikeathon.org for registration. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. And Zenkel Music Center at Skidmore College, presenting Jazz Institute concerts by Golden Striker Trio, Bill Charlap Quintet, and the Skidmore Jazz Faculty through July 7th. Skidmore.edu/summer.
Vox Pop, The Gardening Show on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Number to call is 800-348-2551. We're joined by Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Fred Breglia. Now, if you were tuned in a few moments ago, you know that David and New Paltz had a two-part question, one involving ancient archaeological digs, and the second part is now coming up. David, you're back on.
Well, out of these outcroppings are about three maple trees that are maybe a foot and a half in diameter. I call them rock maples. I don't know what the term is, but they're naturally grown to the area here. And I just wondered how large they'll grow before they start to die.
Well, you know, we would like to know the species for sure. Rock maple is often generally a term that's applied to a hard maple, which hence the name rock. And it's often sugar maple most commonly because it's one of the hardest maples.
Have you heard it
sometimes
called
black maple, too?
Black maple.
Yeah, black maple, which is a different species.
Yes.
They often use that term rock maple for that tree as well. And sugar maple and rock and black maple are very, very taxonomically close. But so in terms of size, let's assume that they are those species, since we have rock maple to go on. They're going to be a large tree. They're going to want to be, you know, 3-foot diameter trunk, and 80 foot tall, easy.
Yeah, so we'll be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll take a long time to get there. But if they are too close to the rock outcropping, sometimes that's going to create some potential long-term longevity issues with the tree. It might be a little too dry for those kinds of trees. They like a more rich organic soil in the long haul. Long run of things. So things to look for would be some top dieback, some scorching around the outer edges of the leaves in the end of summer, like that August season, and supplemental watering if you really like those trees and want to keep them growing and help them live longer. Supplemental watering, especially like July, August, September, those 3 months.
And then, if you want to grow grapes there, maybe you should probably remove them.
It might be too much shade if you're looking for grapes. Yeah. Although I wouldn't, thinking that from the outcroppings and stuff, it sounds like that site might not be the best site for the grape.
David, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Mark in Cooperstown, you're next on The Gardening Show.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
My question concerns the nutrient levels of vegetables. Is there any way to test it? I was told... Well, I read somewhere that if I ate a carrot in 1960, I'd have to eat 11 carrots today to get the same nutrient level.
This sounds like a science forum question.
Well, that's a good one, though. I do get that one quite a bit, actually, believe it or not.
Really?
You got
an answer for him?
Well, I'll start it off. I don't know if it's 1 to 11 ratio because it really varies on soils. But in general, soils have been used and reused and used again. And in general, a fertile soil has got a lot more nutrients in there. First few years, you got tons of nutrients in a new soil body. But once you start growing the same crops in that same garden repeatedly, you are losing the nutrient content in the soil, and hence the nutrients are not being absorbed and they are not contained in that fruit or vegetable as much as it had been in, 1920s.
And the moral of that story is add some organic material every year. Yeah. Improve that soil every year.
Yep. It is going to be key to add stuff to that soil, and you could really build it up. Soil is a living entity. It's not just minerals, sand,
and some of the organic fertilizers, too, would be really good for that.
The beneficial bacteria, beneficial fungi, the microorganisms, trace elements, all of that's going to help make your carrot more rich, nutrient-dense, is what we like to say.
Crop rotation, letting some places go fallow if you really have some space, all could help as well. But you could also try, though I don't know how it would translate into the carrot exactly, but you could try having a soil test done by your local cooperative extension. And they would allow you, would give you the idea of what was available in the soil, what you're lacking in the soil, so that you could mend it.
Yeah, and that's a relatively inexpensive test. You'll get a complete fertility test with pH for under $20 at the local cooperative extension.
And
they'll send it out to Cornell University.
Some trace elements.
Yeah, trace elements as well. And you can also tell them what crops you're actually going for. And they'll actually come back with the report and tell you whether or not your soil is good for that crop and also how to adjust it to get it to be good for that crop. So very handy. I'd say the best bang you can get for probably under $20 for a soil test.
Well, thank you for the call. Let's go to David in Gainesburg. David, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for the call. I have a Honeycrisp apple tree. It's probably 7, maybe even 10 years old, and it fails to bloom. And the last 3 years, about 3 years ago, I got 3 apples. Next year, I got no blooms at all. Last year, 6 to 8-ish apples based on the blooms that did show up. It's a standard. It's got to be better than 16 feet tall and about as wide. But it failed to bloom at all this year.
It's getting
not one flower.
Full sun? It's in full sun? Pretty much,
I would call it three quarters
sun.
Yeah. It's a couple in the hour, the morning hours, like 10, and then from like 1 on, it gets full sun.
You know, you're not alone in the lack of flowering for this season. As we said earlier, there was a lot of cold weather that damaged the flowers, so you may have just lost flowers. Also, this wasn't going to be a big flowering year anyway, so we were going into the year a little light. And then thirdly, you said standard, and a standard tree is a slower tree than a dwarf or semi-dwarf. It does take a little bit longer to mature, so it sounds like it's getting there. Are you doing some pruning?
I did prune this year. The 3 things I've done, I've 2 prunes on it since I've had it. I prune basically the top, trying to keep it down under 16 feet so that I can get to the apples.
And you do that. You do that pruning,
okay.
and you're doing that pruning in the end of winter.
February.
Yeah, that's
February. End of February. Never in March.
Okay.
If it's,
it depends on the warmest day in February,
that,
what ends up happening.
If
also, last year I read it might be getting too vigorous. So, and it gets about 8 to 10 inches of new growth every year. So I cut, I took just a spade at the drip line and cut around the entire tree to, I don't know what that does, stop the suckers that way, the roots.
Yeah. It's a stress to the tree that then allows it to sort of react and therefore set more flower buds.
I'd still be concerned about the amount of sun. You know, a lot of times on a flowering tree, if somebody says, boy, it's growing like mad, but I'm not getting any flowers, it may just not be enough sun.
They do like full sun, those apples.
It should be from sun up to sundown.
For the fruit set. I mean, the tree itself will do fine. It can live in shade for years and years, but they do decrease dramatically with each hour less of sun per day.
David, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to Lars in Glens Falls. Lars, you're on.
Hi, guys. My question is bugs and worms on cabbage, broccoli, and tomatoes. What can I dust with?
We love this. We love this.
Well, cabbage, you know, cabbage has cabbage moth. It's a little green worm. And tomatoes, if they have a worm, is called a tomato hornworm. They're two different creatures, two different, you know, larval insects. So if you think you need to dust, which my first recommendation would be to, I don't know how many you have. If you have 100 of each, then this is not a good idea. But if you have 6 of each, going out there and literally picking off those creatures is very effective. But if you need to dust, there are, bacillus products. These are biological spores that are parasitizing moth.
Something like rotenone?
No. But rotenone, I don't think you can get that anymore.
Not so much, no. The BT products.
Bacillus thuringiensis, but it's the type 4 caterpillars or 4 moths, and you would dust that, and that would be very effective.
Okay.
There's a couple others that'll work, too. Yep.
Lars, we appreciate the call. It's Vox Pop. It's The Gardening Show, 800-348-2551. Bob Graves from Fatigan's Nursery, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, and Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum, our expert panel here today. And let's see, the newfangled phone system tells me that it's time to talk to Chuck in Hudson. Chuck, you're on.
Hello, how you doing?
Good.
I'm calling up about a castor bean plant.
Okay. Castor bean, okay.
Okay.
And do you know where they're from?
I don't know exactly what continent they are from, but they're tropical, subtropical. You can pretty much find them, I think, all the way around the equator these days.
Go ahead, Chuck. Your phone line, I got to say, is terrible. So why don't you ask your final question here, and then you can listen on the radio, okay?
It's this plant. It's about 12 inches tall right now, but I know it's going to get big.
If you plant them outside, they'll grow to
6-8 feet.
Yeah.
Okay, Chuck, thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, next time, I think you had a ground problem on your phone. We're hearing the 60-cycle hum there, so might want to fix that. It sounds very lousy on the radio, but thank you for the call. Let's go to Jesse and Troy. Jesse.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about Nanking cherry, Prunus tomentosa. I planted, this is like the first, like, fruit plant that I planted when I was probably like 15, and I'm 33 now. And this thing, every year, it flowers beautifully, and then it gets some kind of a disease that completely defoliates it, and it doesn't get any fruit. And then it sends out, you know, new buds break, all the old small branches die off, and it's able to, you know, push out new growth. But it's been doing this every year, like, for 15 years. And every year I'm like, oh, maybe this will be the year I'll get fruit. But it's, like, literally never gotten fruit because of this issue. And I just was wondering if there's something common that you know of that this could be, or if it's the kind of thing I need to, like, bring a sample into someone.
Do you offer those, Bob?
Yeah, not that particular one, but I don't know just where you're located, but we don't have a whole lot of success, depending upon how cold it is where you are, with
He's in Troy.
Yeah, you're going to be maybe a little too cold, but you've also got some fungal issues, I think, too. I mean, when a tree comes out, looks pretty good, and then develops bad leaves and defoliates, you're going to need to apply a fungicide preventatively before you see that problem. But sweet cherry, you know, they just don't produce really well. this far north. It's marginal.
And, yeah. Yeah, the foliage is hardy, but the fruit set and the flowers are the problem.
It does sound like a disease issue. You could do it yourself if you did, kind of Google that and come up with a preventative, with the item and then a preventative fungicide that may do the trick.
Okay. But, yeah, I'll have to cut off a piece. I was thinking about bringing it into an extension agent and see what they
say. Yeah, take it to Troy down there, Dave Chinnery in the Troy office.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, thanks a lot, Jesse. We appreciate it. Over to Helen in Lenox, Mass. Helen. Hey, Helen, you got to turn your radio down, okay? Oh, for Pete's sake. Helen.
Hello.
No, she's a goner? Okay, Helen. Helen waited like 17 minutes to be on the air.
Oh, dear.
And finally got to her, she had her radio on. She was driving in the car. And Helen, we're sorry. We're very sorry. Let's have a moment of just silence here for Helen.
It's all Ray's fault.
Okay, I agree. Blame the new phone system. Jonathan in Herkimer. Jonathan, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I'm looking to transplant a pine tree that I have to move anyway in the southern Adirondacks. It's about 6 feet tall. It's about 5 feet wide. Am I going to be able to transplant this?
You could definitely transplant it. I would wait till as we had mentioned earlier in the show, so the dormant season. A big pine like that is it's going to take a shock in the middle of this kind of relatively dry weather, or even more than relatively dry weather that we've been having. But one thing you could do is root prune it now. So in other words, if you have the luxury of moving this in the fall, I would go around this sort of like etch out the shape of the ball, the size of the ball that you're going to be digging, and use a spade, just go straight down. You want to sever all the little feeder roots, but you don't want to try to lift that ball out. And then that's all you're going to do. And you can water it actually in advance of this. It'll make that whole process easier.
Root pruning is really important if something's never been moved.
That's
it. That size.
6 feet tall. That's going
to
have a lot of roots.
Concentrate the roots in a small area.
Now, how big should that root ball be?
Well, I always tell people as big as you think you're going to be able to move, because the bigger the better. But realistically, that's going to be probably,
on
a tree like
lift.
That. It's what you can kind of lift. The more you can get on that, the better the tree will be and the less transplant shock it will have.
So do some working out and then wait a while.
And do the root pruning now. Do the root pruning now, which will help push those roots closer to the trunk of the tree as opposed to being stretched all out. And that's going to go a long ways to helping you move that later. And remember, just because they're big balls, they don't need to be really deep. They don't need to be really deep. So you're only talking about 12, 15 inches deep. Wide is the goal. You really don't need more than 12, 13, 14, 15 inches.
All right, Jonathan, thank you very much. Over to John in East Greenbush. John, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have an old pine tree, probably at least 100 years old. I think it's an eastern white pine, and it looks to be in very good shape. But I recently noticed there's a whole line of woodpecker or some other kinds of holes that birds are digging into one side of the trunk, which kind of bifurcates at a certain point. And it's probably, the holes are probably 2 inches long, wide, and there's a series of probably 8 or 10 of them for about 8 or 10 feet along the tree. So what can I do about that, if anything, and will it kill the tree? As I said, the tree looks in good shape right now.
If you see woodpeckers,
it's probably insects in the tree already, and the woodpeckers are going for those.
That's it, which means that there's interior rot, which is not surprising on an old tree. Anything that's, huge and old, it's
could
like wrinkles
some,
on human beings as they get older.
There's a bunch of different pine tree borers, too, that get into pines. And if it's a big old tree, it may have enough tissue to survive that. It's pretty difficult to control some of those when they're already established in an older tree.
Yeah. It might be a good one to get a consultation on and, go into possibly treesaregood.com, which is a free site put out by the International Society of Arboriculture for consumers, and you could find a local certified arborist in your area. But that's the kind of thing where you would probably want to consult, because you really want to get in there. But the fact that you've got woodpeckers, that absolutely guarantees that there's interior rot, and like I said, not a surprise on an old tree, but from a safety standpoint.
The consult would show that you do or do not have rot.
Yeah, it would also...
Treesaregood.com?
Treesaregood.com is a great spot to try to find the local certified arborist in your area. You can look at a phone book, too. I mean, there's no real wrong way to find one.
Yeah, the woodpeckers
filling
are there.
Filling the holes makes sense?
No. That actually doesn't. No. There's no.
That's not the problem.
Wound sprays and wound dressings and sealers have all been proven through research to actually not work, and they've been proven to actually sometimes prevent sealing. The tree is going to seal that wound up, or it's not. We want to figure out that's a symptom. These things pecking holes. There's a cause for that, and really, what we're looking for is a cause. In addition to that, you also want to identify ways that we could stretch this tree out, maybe make it live a lot longer, or if there's some really safety concerns involved with some interior rot, this could crush homes. So consult would certainly be something worth doing. Cheap, easy way to go compared to doing anything else.
All right, before our break here, this is an email that came in from AC in Albany. I purchased two dogwood trees, same kind, and planted them on the same day in mid-May. One of them has produced beautiful variegated leaves, while the other one appears to still be dormant. It's alive, but I'm wondering if there is any pruning I can do to encourage growth this year or next, or if I should just water it and let nature take its course next spring.
If it hasn't produced leaves yet, that's not good.
It's too late, probably. I mean, leaving it in for another couple of weeks to see if it produces leaves is what we would recommend. The plant needs to produce leaves this year. It cannot wait a year.
They do not skip a year.
No.
Does not happen.
So what could be the possible cause of such a thing?
It could be winter damage.
Just died.
But one was fine and the other one wasn't?
Sure. Possible. I mean, things don't always make it when you
right. And if you planted it in May before it had leaves, it just never kind of woke up. Just was unable.
Yep. All right, listen, 45 seconds here. Rapid fire email question, and then we'll take a break. Michael says, I have two fig trees, very healthy leafing, no figs. They're 3 years old. Any ideas?
Wait.
Yeah, sun.
Put them outside. If they're not outside,
they're not in full sun. They're not going to fruit.
Yep, and they should. They pretty much are self-fruitful.
Self-fruitful. I like it. Well, it's the gardening show. Bob Graves is here, Greg Ward and Fred Breglia. Yours truly, Ray Graff. The number to call is 800-348-2551. We'll take a short break, and then we'll hit the home stretch.
Support comes from Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, offering annuals, perennials, vegetables, trees and shrubs, indoor and outdoor plants, and garden and landscape information. HadleyGardenCenter.com. Kingsway Communities, Schenectady, New York, offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including assisted living and more. Caring in the family tradition. 518-393-8800. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. The 1850 House and Tavern, an historic boutique bread and breakfast on the banks of the Rondout River for weekend getaways, retreats, and weddings. Main Street, Rosendale, New York. The1850House.com. And the University at Albany Theater Program, working to train the next generation of performers, designers, technicians, playwrights, and stage managers. Albany.edu/theater.
Vox Pop on WAMC. The number is 800-348-2551. The wildly popular gardening show here. Bob Graves from Fatigan's, Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum. Fred, what's happening at the Arboretum?
You know, we still have a lot of stuff going on. A lot of our calendar events is packed. I encourage people to come out and visit us. We have a lot of sculptures, big metal sculptures that have been installed around.
Why?
It's garden art. And there's neat ones. Yeah, some really, really cool ones. I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but check it out on site and really, really neat. Also on our Facebook page as well. We have posters, our photos picked and posted. But check out www.landisarboretum.org for the full slate of events and everything from concerts to star parties to adult programs.
Adult entertainment.
If you consider pruning adult entertainment and tree identification, which I do.
Spicy stuff.
We're filled with it.
All right, nursery people, what's your big word of advice today?
I think we both agree that if you've got stuff in the ground, water it.
Yeah.
Water it.
Even if it's deep, from last year.
Deep watering. Really, really dry.
Less frequent deep watering is better than more frequent light watering.
All right, let's go to Nancy in Boston Spa. Nancy, how are you doing?
Good. I have some pest questions.
Oh, I like it.
I have been gardening for years, and my vegetable garden is being eaten. What I thought could have been bunnies, but I caught squirrels. I've never known that squirrels like kale and broccoli. Wow. Is that really
they're getting a health kick, the squirrels.
I think what's happening is they've learned, and you know what? We don't want those squirrels in the Berkshires.
That's what it's all about, isn't it, Greg? Yeah. I see.
So you have to do something about that.
You know, I've seen cayenne pepper actually work to some degree. It has to be reapplied if you put it all around those crops.
What was that again?
The cayenne pepper that you buy, the hot pepper.
So just what? Sprinkle it around the ground?
You just sprinkle it around the ground. You can even dust it a little bit on the leaves.
There are some repellents that are fox urine and coyote urine and things that you can sprinkle around. Depends on how dedicated those squirrels are.
They are very clever because I did cover up something, you know, with this big screen thing, and we tied it up, and they dug right underneath it, and we caught them in last
night.
They're
tough.
Evil critters.
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad, Nancy.
And so what are they eating, Nancy? What specifically are they eating?
Kale, broccoli, Brussels sprouts.
All the greens.
And
amazing.
Yeah, and Swiss chard.
Yeah, not a super common problem with a squirrel, but it wouldn't be, you know, it's not the most surprising thing to hear them eating some greenery as well.
But, I mean, I have tons of bird feeders. I'm feeding them like crazy. And yet they're going for my vegetables.
What if you, I mean, maybe you don't want to do this, but what if you stopped putting out the bird seed, just stopped it entirely? Because I've noticed when I do that in my yard, the squirrels disappear for a while. I mean, they thin out anyway. I wouldn't say they disappear. So right now I might have, you know, or when I'm feeding, I might have 7 or 8 or 12 squirrels. But when I stop feeding, I have 2.
Interesting.
So and they do love bird feed.
And they're young. They're definitely not full grown.
Wow,
they're
that's amazing to get young people to eat kale. It's incredible. Good for you, Nancy.
Yep. They also make squirrel-proof bird feeders too, which depending on the model.
Oh, I have that. I have those. I've got the squirrel-proof.
By eliminating the food, the squirrels may move on because I can't imagine that kale is their first choice.
No, I can't imagine it.
Maybe a side salad, right?
That was
right?
the first thing they went for. That was the very first thing they went for.
Incredible.
Not a rabbit. You would
know,
think
and neighbors
they must have been
are still
reading about it or something.
I think they probably were. They listen to WAMC, all about that health food and such.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Nancy.
And I have one more question.
Sure.
I have one more quick question. I've had trees taken down years ago, like 14 years ago, and the stumps are still there rotting and that kind of thing. And all of a sudden, we've had some kind of critter coming and tearing them up and digging deep. And going after, I assume, grubs and bugs and things that are in the...
That's what they're eating.
Why would that...
Because it's ripe. Oh, well, skunks would do it, and if they're still up and looks like big chunks of wood, it still could be woodpeckers. You know,
and bears would do it too in a more rural environment. But bears love old rotted stumps like that.
They're just going to help you get rid of the stump, basically.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, but tearing up the lawn and
skunks probably.
Yeah.
Well, Nancy, you sound like you live in a frightening place. you're okay up there?
I live in a neighborhood. And I'm being inundated with nature.
So probably not bears then. probably skunks.
Well, you never know.
And other
Boston
critters.
Boston Spa's on the edge of where you might find some bears.
That's true.
Well, not to terrify you, but
could be a lot worse though. Yeah.
Well, good job, Nancy. Thanks for the call. Great call.
Thank you.
So, Bob, you mentioned coyote urine. Where do you get the beverage center? Where do you get that?
No. We sell it.
You sell this stuff?
Yeah. There's packages.
All right. I pity the poor guy who's like, okay, time to go get the coyote urine. We got to sell this.
I never ask him how they farm it.
I mean, that's.
I don't know how they put it in the bottle.
You could not pay somebody enough for that particular job, okay? All right. On that happy
note, that's where you get it.
Back to the phones we go. It's Lorraine in Smallwood. Lorraine, you're on.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. I have 3 hydrangea bushes that do not bloom.
Uh-huh.
What can I feed them, or how do I start them to bloom?
How old are they?
About 2-3 years old.
Okay, so they're probably one of the newer varieties of the macrophyllas would be my guess. And what we found recently is you really need to fertilize the jeepers out of them, much, much more heavily fertilizing than you think you might, because they have to reach a certain height to bloom. If they don't get a certain height, they don't bloom, and they're going to die back most winter. So some more fertilizing is going to help you on that.
And then next...
And what is a good fertilizer?
Well, a lot of us are recommending Espoma products, which are organic, flower tone, plant tone, or a couple of things. They
Holly tone, something like
complete
that.
Complete fertilizer is your what you're shooting for with
maybe twice as often as what you would normally.
I just bought something that they recommended in Agway called Tiger Bloom. Is that something that would be good?
Does it have some numbers on it?
Yeah, I know Tiger Bloom product. I know what you're talking about. That's like a flower inducer. It's a heavy, like a blossom booster type of product.
It's water soluble.
Yep, water soluble. I'm thinking
what's tricky with the water soluble fertilizers is that you have to make up a batch of water with them. You have to, and so it is a dry season. We've been recommending watering. So if you add that to the water you apply to that plant and you do it weekly for the next 6 weeks, then yes, it will work. Otherwise, we were recommending a dry fertilizer that you would apply by the cupful around the base of the plant.
But either of those would work. Okay. What you've got there is not a bad product.
Just use it more often.
Yeah, Lorraine, thank you.
Exactly, use it more often.
Fred, Bob, and Greg here. They are our experts. Ray Graff, expert at almost nothing. Let's go back to the phones. And Eileen in Saratoga Springs. Eileen.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about ornamental grass. I planted ornamental grass 2 years ago all around the perimeter of my deck, and it grew to be about 4 feet tall. It was beautiful. It was it had like a white band down the center with a green margins on either side, and it came back last year great, and this year it didn't come back at all. And I was wondering what happened.
Winter, probably. Possibly foals as well.
But. Yeah, this winter really hurt grasses. We lost a lot of grasses because there was no snow cover and we had repeated freezing and thawing, and they do not like that.
Yep, and big freeze-thaw cycles where it got really warm and really cold on a no-snow cover on a grass that has marginal root system in terms of cold hardiness in our area. It's almost guaranteed.
That was the winner.
We're assuming it's the type of grass called miscanthus.
Yes.
And those are, they're marginal. I'm not sure where she lives, Ray.
Saratoga Springs.
I live in Saratoga Springs.
Yeah. So that's
New York.
You're up there, where it's definitely on the edge for that grass anyway.
Oh, it came 2 years in a row. It came in beautifully.
Yeah, it could grow for 10 years in a row, but when we have the weather it doesn't like, then
we
that's
lost
the
things
year.
Last winter that have been in the ground 30 or 40.
So
years.
We had the arboretum. We've had a couple of
really bad winter. Some things we didn't think it was.
No, there's some things that we thought were really in trouble, and there are other things that I never even thought were going to be in trouble, and they're like 3/4 dead.
Eileen, thank you so much. Over to Patricia in Oneonta. How are things in Oneonta today, Patricia?
Beautiful. Thank you.
You're on.
Oh, thank you. My question is really a follow-up to the hydrangea question. I also have a hydrangea in my front yard. It is, I believe, one of the newer varieties. It did bloom the first couple of years it was there. It had big, beautiful blue blooms on it. It has not bloomed for the last at least 3 years. It gets gorgeous foliage, but no blooms.
Yeah, and that's probably winter injury as well. In most cases, their flower buds on some of those varieties are marginal. So some screening for the winter, like burlap, I recommend burlap. Not touching the actual foliage, but real close.
What happens with that plant is that it wakes up early. So it starts to grow in late April, and then we often get a lot of freezing temperatures that will damage any new buds that are, flower buds and leaf buds that are, showing there right on the top. So by slowing that down, now this last winter was just a disaster, especially with the cold weather in April. But normally coming out of winter, if the plant has been winterized, winter mulched, then that slows the plant down. And Fred mentioned burlap. We also like to mention literally soil or compost kind of burying the plant. For the wintertime, doing that in December, leaving it on until mid-April, pulling that all away around the 1st of May, and then watching the weather. If we're going to get a decent freeze, protecting that plant so that the new growth is not damaged.
And as we said before, from about mid-May on, you want to fertilize it more heavily than you think you should.
Okay. Right. And do I cut it back in the fall? Do I cut the stalks down?
No. That may also inhibit. It also does reduce its ability to survive the winter with those flower buds that you're hoping for.
Yeah, and certain varieties of hydrangea, too, will be pruned differently. And I found a great site that's free to consumers. It's called hydrangeashydrangeas.com. I was tipped off on that one, and I've looked at it, and I looked at the information.
There's a lot of controversy in the literature about your question.
There is, yeah. But hydrangeashydrangeas.com is a pretty good site. So,
all right. No idea it was a hot-button issue. Patricia, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go on over to June in Saratoga. June, you're on.
Hi, fellas. I'm looking how to transplant primrose.
Hello. Yeah, they're all thinking, June.
We're wondering what kind of I'm wondering what kind of primrose you're talking about. Are we talking like the Japanese primula that has the little spike with a bunch of nice, really flowers on it that come out of a rosette of leaves? Looks like
talking
that.
Talking the perennial, herbaceous.
No, it's kind of 2 feet tall, not quite 2 feet tall, yellow.
And spreading. It has sort of spreads out. Kind of aggressively.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. So that's evening primrose.
Ah, evening primrose.
Yeah, Onothera, as opposed to primula. And that, you know, is one tough cookie. You could just dig up a big chunk of that today, as long as you're willing to put it back in the ground and keep it really well watered for the next few weeks. So anytime you
want. Even though the flowers are still on?
Well, you know, if you want to enjoy the flowers for a little longer and wait, it will pass, you know, in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, even if the flowers are on it, you could do it. If you're trying to make off with a piece from your neighbor's yard or something right now, go for it.
Which we don't recommend.
My neighbor's giving it to me.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
That's
fair enough.
I meant to say.
Primrose do transplant pretty well, though.
Very easy.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter how to dig them out.
Take up a nice, you know, amount of the root system, you know, maybe some of the soil that's attached to that so that you're keeping the root system somewhat intact and replant it in your yard, you know, in a nice area with a rich, well-composted soil, and then water it really well. It will wilt, but keep it well-watered every day for the first week, and then after that twice a week or so, and it will recover. You may want to be cutting it back after a few days of that wilt so that it regrows. They don't usually rebloom again, but you may see a few more buds again later this summer.
All right, June, thanks a lot for the call. Great call. Nice to hear several from Saratoga today. Let's go down to Hudson and Jacob. You're on, Jacob. Hello, Jacob. Oh, goodbye, Jacob. I'm sorry. Bad connection. We apologize. You wait all that time, and you're on a cell phone, and you go in a tunnel. Fred and Hurley. Fred, you're on.
Hi there. Good afternoon. I've just recently watched a movie called Of the Land, which is about GMOs.
Yeah.
And I was wondering about if you have any idea of how much GMOs may be affecting the commercial markets regarding flowers, plants, trees, shrubs, whatever. And also if you have a take on any of you have a particular take on the idea of GMOs within the market.
There's not an awful lot of genetically modified material in the horticulture industry because there's typically not enough.
Hello, you can't hear us?
Hello.
All right, well, why don't you listen on your radio there, Fred, and they'll answer that question for you. We're having a little trouble with the line here. Go ahead.
There's not enough money in genetically modifying a lot of horticultural products. It's mostly in the agricultural industry, you know, your wheat and soybeans and corn and things like that. So a lot of things have developed through hybridization and specific breeding and natural selection and evolution. But I don't think there's a lot of genetic engineering. Do you?
So far I don't have any. Any plants that are specifically labeled as that or have been looked up as
it's just not economically feasible in general for this industry.
All right, only a minute or two here left. Let's try to bang through an email or two before we wrap it up. This is from Laura. I have had a lilac and crab apple for probably 10 years or more. Both normally get tons of blossoms. This year, both look very green, leafy, and healthy. However, the lilac only produced one tiny flower, and the crabapple did not produce any flower blooms at all. Is there something I should be doing? We did have quite a few late frosts.
Pray for a nicer winter.
So you think that was the reason, the late frosts?
It probably was majority of the issue there, The lilac, I'd wonder if it was getting enough sun. They definitely like the apples. They just produce a lot more when you get full sun.
But if they're in full sun and they bloom before, it was the winter.
All right, this is now we only have about 30 seconds here. This is from Berger. And the subject heading, peony and iris maintenance. Just moved to a place that has well-established plantings of both peonies, blooming now, and irises all done. Love these plants, but don't know what kind of care and feeding they need. I don't want to screw them up. Thank you, Berger. I appreciate that very much. Do I need to feed them something for optimal bloom? And if so, and what and when? Should I cut them back at some point? You gentlemen have 12 seconds to answer that question.
All of them would benefit from being fertilized sometime this late summer or fall. And the peonies you do nothing to. You could deadhead the flowers as they finished. And the iris could be cut back, but it does depend on what kind, so we should probably tell us which one.
Yeah, and watch for iris borer, potential insect issues. Sometimes you want to do a little dividing on the iris.
All right, well, we're done. Hey, Bob.
We got a lot of calls today.
We sure did. Whew. We really moved through them thanks to our new system. Bob, Greg, and Fred, thank you guys for being here. Support comes from Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring an assortment of perennials, annuals, trees, and shrubs. June is Perennial Plant Month, Monday through Sunday, 8 to 5, a gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. Colby Attorney Service, corporate formations, document retrieval services, court filings, and legal publishing for the legal and professional community since 1939, colbyservice.com. Grapes and Grains, Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, specializing in wine and craft spirits for more than 15 years, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins. Grapesandgrainswine.com. And the Whistling Kettle, Troy and Boston Spa, offering a selection of dessert crepes, including the lemon burst made with fresh cream and homemade lemon curd, thewhistlingkettle.com. Thanks again to Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward for being here on this gardening show. We'll do it again next month. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who gathered no moss there in the control room. Also, our phones were answered by Colleen O'Connell today, our producer, Jessica Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, already the week has gone so fast. Tomorrow it's a Food Friday. Stay tuned now for news.